As you've probably already realized if you've clicked on the link, this is one of a short series of European Crucible podcasts where I talk to people who have been part of European Crucible about what it is, how they got involved, what the consequences have been, and particularly about one of the things that takes place within European Crucible, people finding each other, people from different disciplines, different universities, different countries, and collaborating on a multidisciplinary project. If that doesn't make sense already, it will do after you've listened for a bit. So today, it's people who took part in a project called Robotics in Sustainability, Hindering or Accelerating. They have now got a slightly catchier name for this project, which we'll get onto later. I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves in turn, and I start with Dr. Karen Donaldson.
Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Karen Donaldson. I'm currently a project manager at the National Robotarium, which is part of Heriot Watt University and Edinburgh University, and it's a leading robotics institute based at Heriot Watt University.
And what do you actually do there on a day-to-day basis?
At the moment, I project manage a number of different projects for robotics in different sectors. So we are involved in fisheries projects, we're involved in agriculture, space, offshore and manufacturing as well.
Excellent. Katarzyna.
Hi, I'm Katarzyna Kowa. I'm here at the University of Glasgow. I'm an applied mathematician who specializes in fluid and solid mechanics. And what that means is we do a bit of theory, a bit of modeling, a simulation, and also some experiments.
And fluids are notoriously difficult to model mathematically.
Yes, they are. There are lots of little details that we need to keep track of. And there are also different types of flows on different scales that you need to think about. And the types of flows that we are mainly interested are slow and viscous flows.
And is this so that you can design better vessels or survive better underwater? Or what's the practical applications here?
There are actually a lot of practical applications, and you'd be really surprised how far-reaching we can go in different directions. But some of them involve, for example, reducing drag. So for vessels, those are like ships, that's important. And other applications are as far-reaching as the fluid mechanics of ice sheets like Greenland and Antarctica, and also 3D printing applications. They're completely very far away disciplines, but there's one thing in common, and that's fluids.
And I can sense that you are genuinely enjoying all aspects of this. Garrod?
Yep, my name is Garrod Miller. I'm a professor in sociology at the University of Aberdeen. My expertise is in examining the local experiences of international interventions and projects, actually in post-conflict states. So what the international community tries to do to rebuild security, peace, justice, and eventually prompt and promote development in post-conflict states.
So you're there helping things go smoothly after the attention span of the media has moved on, because we're aware of the conflict, we're in the middle of a conflict, we tend to be less aware of it once the conflict has ceased.
Ideally, that would be the case. As an academic, what I generally do is travel to these places, interview people, and find out that what the international community wanted to achieve didn't really happen, sometimes has negative effects, sometimes recreates the exact same problems that were there that resulted in the conflict in the first place.
Right, but the goal is to help and to maybe make up for some of these failures to see the consequences of actions that have happened previously.
That's correct, yes.
And finally, Onur.
Hello, it's Onur Çağlaş Artantaş. Originally from Turkey, I did my PhD in Germany, and this year I'm in Italy for my postdoc at Bocconi in Milan. I'm a lawyer by education, and I did my PhD on energy law, renewable energy. I'm focusing on the renewable energy, green electricity, mostly European Union taxonomy, sustainability, green finance, usually these interconnected areas.
That seems not just interconnected, but a huge area to span, just all linked by that word green.
Well, I'm focusing on the legal and the political part mostly, and the regulatory part, which takes some of the burden off.
Right. So that's a really interesting lineup we've got here. We've got a lawyer interested in the green side of things. We've got someone on post-conflict environments, someone on the mathematics of fluid turbulence, and someone on robotics. I'm going to be interested to talk to you how you found common ground. But before we get to that, just a little bit about how you each got involved with Crucible. Honor, what made you take part in it?
I saw it actually on the internet in one of the blogs for the international researchers, and it looked like a very good chance to get in contact with people from over there, because usually we are geographically very close from the European academia, but we are not really well connected. I didn't know anybody from there. I didn't have any contacts. So that seemed like a very good opportunity. And yeah, it looks like I was right. That was a very good chance for me.
And this is what Eurocrucible is all about. It's realizing that there might be people quite close to each other physically, but who would never normally meet and exchange ideas because we tend to stay in our own little areas of expertise.
Right.
Gerard?
Yeah, as I'm right here in Scotland, our research development officers in the university distribute these things and kind of try to encourage people to put themselves forward. But it's really my interests, similar, I guess, different from Anur in that he was trying to breach that spatial difference. To me, it's a disciplinary thing. So I want to try to make the lessons that I've learned, particularly in post-conflict environments and regarding, say, peace programming or justice programming, I want to make the lessons that I've learned pertinent to other activities. And so I'm very well aware that in all kinds of fields, we, the international community, scientists, experts, engineers, try to implement solutions that have unpredictable and unexpected and sometimes negative impact. And so to me, Crucible was a great way to try to identify people who are dealing with very different spheres of activity, but that might really learn from the lessons from the kind of work that I've been doing.
And obviously, with hindsight, it was a good idea to take part in Eurocrucible. But did you have any concerns beforehand that you were going to turn up there knowing about post-conflict environments and there would be all these physicists and chemists and mathematicians who would not find it easy to find common ground with you?
Yeah, you're always ambivalent. There's always a bit of a barrier to be overcome. And I think that that's true enough. The social sciences, the arts and humanities are usually underrepresented in these kinds of activities. And what you're really looking for are scientists or engineers who have the capacity to think a little bit outside their own disciplinary area, which it's not rare. I hope it's not rare. But it does make for difficult conversations. And a lot of what you end up doing is really kind of starting at the basics, because you're trying to communicate through really, obviously, like in our own case, four very different languages.
Yes. But at least you're able to have those conversations, which you wouldn't normally be around for. Captain Jenna?
Yeah. So I can't remember where I heard about the Crucible. I think it was an email sent out to a mailing list or something like that. But I'm really glad I read that email and that I applied to be part of this, because I made many valuable connections with many people from various disciplines. And this is the point. I think the best type of mathematical ideas and mathematical methodologies that come about are in connection to solving problems from other fields, far-fetched fields that I wouldn't have been thinking of in the first place. And this is what the Crucible gave me. It gave me the chance to expand to looking at a problem that's completely not something that I would have been looking at just by myself. And so talking to other people, other engineers, physicists, lawyers, and historians, and people from social sciences, that was very valuable to me to be able to expand what I do to other fields.
And I guess given that you are interested in fluid dynamics, a little bit of interdisciplinary turbulence would have appealed to you.
Oh, yes.
And finally, Karen, you're at Heriot Watt.
I actually applied when I was at the University of Edinburgh, and my application story is similar to Gerard. At the time, I was actually a postdoctoral research associate. So I applied because I was used to working in a multidisciplinary way across robotics, physics, chemistry, etc. And so when I seen this opportunity, it seemed like a really good idea to get involved, to create new networks and collaborations, especially now that the Scottish Crucible had extended into Europe. It seemed like a great opportunity that I couldn't miss.
And it seemed like it because it was. So Gerard, let's get onto the stage of how you actually found each other, because you were saying you were a little bit of ambivalence. When did you begin to sift through all these other interesting people around you and realize that these other three were the ones you wanted to work with?
Yeah, well, the process that you go through in the Crucible, of course, facilitates your talking to a number of other individuals, and you talk about your own interests, they talk about their interests. It's like a matchmaking process. And so some of those are not duds, but it's clear from the beginning, okay, we're probably not going to be able to make anything really work here. But there's always then the opposite of that, which is if you find three or four or five people, even from very, very different disciplines, coming from very different perspectives, but with an interest area that's, you know, a theme or broad topic or a problem that you think, okay, well, actually, we can have a conversation around this. And in this case, Karen and myself and another colleague named Guan Chen, originally we're talking about lithium mining and the fact that the solutions to a lot of the climate change problems themselves require resources, extraction that is itself going to cause then knock-on effects and problems. And so this is when it dawned on us that there was potentially enough of a common interest here from these different perspectives. You know, that involves battery technology, which our colleague Guan Chen is involved in, robotics, chemicals, law, but also the social aspects, that these problems, in essence, and I think this is true for many complex 21st century problems, are too much really to be tackled by any one discipline. And you need these different disciplinary angles to really kind of understand how difficult those problems are to overcome and then try to come up with ways to think about them and how we might solve them. So I guess in this case, it was simply originally noting that that issue of a lot of those kind of green policy or climate change problems themselves are purported to have technology solutions. But from my perspective, once we start talking about technology solutions, we are immediately talking about extractive industries. And those extractive industries, that's exactly where my kind of field comes in, have negative repercussions in the global south, in post-conflict contexts, in impoverished countries and societies that we need to then take into account if we're talking about, you know, things like robotics in green technology.
Karen, it's part of the appeal here that you're not just looking at a little fraction of a problem, but you're seeing the problem in its bigger context and offering ways to overcome some of those problems before most of us are even aware that we might have issues with things like the types of batteries we use.
Yes, exactly. Just following on from what Gerard has said, that's exactly what we want to do, is we want to identify these problems and we want to come up with a research methodology that looks at both the techno-economic analysis and the social economic analysis and put these together so that we can identify issues in a multidisciplinary way and address them before they become an even bigger issue like Gerard has just expanded on.
And how does that call into use your particular area of expertise?
Before I was a project manager, my education, I'm actually a doctor of plasma physics, but then I moved into space mechatronics and robotics. So I bring that knowledge into this project. So I became the principal investigator on this project, and I brought it with me when I became the project manager at the Robotarium. But between us, as Gerard has said, that we're so multidisciplinary, but after finding that common ground together as a team, we work really well. And actually, we find that the knowledge that each of us have brings a new dimension and a new way of thinking outside the box to the same common problem, which looks at how we extract minerals and resources, but also how robotics can help the world become more sustainable and how those robotic systems can be more sustainable in their design and their effective use.
And Anna, you are looking at the legal framework around this.
Yes, mostly the regulatory policy and the regulatory framework.
And Katarzyna, you're the one who I'm still haven't quite worked out how you fit into this.
I'm a mathematical modeler, which means we use the methodologies that we develop for other problems. We use them to gain insight into other areas of research that would require modeling and prediction and simulation.
So where are you at with the project now? You've got a name for it now, haven't you? I think it's called Recover.
Yes, that's correct. We came up with the name because we're looking at the life cycle of robotic technology in general. So at the moment, we have run a really effective workshop whereby we had a number of different disciplines in the same room talking about the same topic, which was robotics. Is it hindering the world? Is it accelerating the world? How we can make those systems more sustainable and how we can use robotics for a sustainable world. We also have a number of PhD students and master students doing research for us. And we're pleased to say that that work is being published soon in a book. So we're very much looking forward to that. And from all the knowledge and data that we got from the workshop, we're looking at having a second workshop and also applying for a much bigger proposal funding grant as well.
It's funny because with the general public, you often get AI and robotics get tangled up. And obviously, there's a lot of debate at the moment about whether AI is helping the world or hindering the world in the long term. But there isn't very much in the public eye about robotics in the same way.
Yes, that's correct. Obviously, AI is quite a hot topic at the moment for a number of different reasons. But you're correct is that robotics can be seen in two different ways, I find. When I talk to people about it, is that they see them as something that are accelerating innovation and technology, but people can also see them in a negative light due to either its creation, their use, or essentially taking over roles that people could do. But that's the kind of things that we want to address and make sure that the public are more informed as to the robotics sector in its design and operation.
You know, some of these things you could say they're kind of temporal. In the 70s and 80s, the use of robotics in factories and the way that robots replaced the labor of many working classes was very much a topic of debate. It's not a topic of debate today in the West because we've already done that. We've replaced most of that labor. But in a lot of the global South, and particularly in places in Southeast Asia, Central America, that have become the warehouses and factories of the world, you have millions of people who left their land, handed it over pretty much to states or corporations, and went to urban places in order to work exactly in those factories. Then robots, potentially, and AI will be replacing those jobs, right? So this is where the kind of negative externalities come in. We don't see this as such of a problem in the West. And we are, of course, the ones that will drive all of this. It'll just result in cheaper products for us. But how will these cities somehow manage these suddenly unemployed millions over the next 10 or 20 years if their labor really is replaced by robots and AI systems? So this is what I mean by, you know, we can think we have a solution to something. We think it'll make things better, but very often, almost always, there are significant negative repercussions from the decisions that we make.
So this is thinking about post-manual labor environments.
Well, particularly in the case of like with the initial idea that we were talking about with lithium mining, for example, but really any mining that's necessary for green tech. There's a lot of the minerals and reserves that are necessary that are taken from global South places, and people lose their jobs or they lose their land or they lose their livelihoods because massive corporations, usually funded obviously by investment from the global North, want to acquire those resources to create technologies to better the lives in the global North. And so it doesn't matter if people lose their jobs, they're simply pushed aside and kind of ignored. But this is also why in some ways we came up with the word recover, right? Because we realized in having that conversation about the extraction that's necessary to kind of feed green technology, we realized that one of the ways to bring down the level of extraction, or at least limit the level of extraction, is to be much, much better at recovering the metals that we've already used, right? So the project kind of developed to be talking about robotics as how can robotics be help us extract these resources, but also a significant part of the discussion has been how robotics could help us recover these resources, in essence recycle our technologies better so we have to extract less of this material.
Honor, I think you wanted to get in there.
Yeah, so I was in Berlin like 2 weeks ago, and there was with an Argentinian colleague. We were speaking about the indigenous groups living in the north of Argentina displaced by the lithium mines. And there's a huge demand for lithium right now, and it's partly boosted by the green transition demands from the global north, maybe Europe. And we were talking about how the negative externalities there was actually apparent. Like another side of the world, your good intentions actually leading up to some unintended result. But if we could actually recycle some of the materials we use in the global north, in the industrialized societies, that could also reduce the reliance on this sort of extractive economy.
And not deluding ourselves about being green when we're not being green, because it may just appear that way, but it's having knock-on effects in other parts of the world we're not necessarily aware of. Now, I believe you've also had some extra funding for this, haven't you, Karen?
So we got some funding from the Scottish Informatics and Computer Science Alliance. So we want to say thank you very much to them for giving us the extra funding. And this has allowed us to not only expand the invitation of the workshop to a wider audience and help people to attend the workshop as well, it's also allowed us to continue these workshops to collect more data and more information. And we found that even from one workshop, the true great thing about working in a multidisciplinary way is that when you present the work in a multidisciplinary way, it's very thought-provoking. So we've already had a number of contacts trying to work with us and collaborate with us across the university. And as Onur has said as well, when he talks to people about what we're doing, we're really creating a huge network and people that want to collaborate with us in a number of different ways across different disciplines. So we're very pleased about that.
If you're after being thought-provoking, then presumably the goal is to provoke the thoughts in the right people. So are you trying to get what policymakers, figures from industry to listen to what you've got to say?
Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that. And so we have Onur on our team, obviously, looking at policy regulations, policymakers as well. So owner can extend out to his network. But yes, the ultimate goal is to get engineers, sociologists, policymakers talking about the same research topic and look for ways, points that need addressed and things that we could be improved on. We're also looking at robotic design from a co-creation point of view as well. Often robotics can be shoehorned into situations, and so their use becomes less effective and less efficient. So there's a whole scope of aspects that we're looking at, including policy making and taking potentially things to the government as well.
Anu, do you think this has the potential to see off a problem before it becomes too great?
Yes, I wouldn't say early, but it's very timely to start now thinking about the circular economy, making it more local, actually creating the networks across the regional producers to establish at least a basis for a circular economy.
Okay, I want to finish just getting a word from each of you about your overview of the whole Crucible experience and what you'd say to somebody who is listening to this, thinking about applying to a future Euro Crucible. Katarzyna.
Yeah, I would say definitely go for it. It's a chance to expand what you're doing to problems that you wouldn't have been thinking of originally, and meet people with whom you can develop ideas that require multiple areas of expertise and explore things that you haven't been thinking of doing before. So I think it's a really good opportunity.
And for you?
And for me as well, it's a chance to apply the mathematical modeling and theoretical skills to an area that I wouldn't have been previously thinking of myself.
And what was the biggest surprise for you about Crucible from what you imagined it was going to be like?
I was surprised about the multidisciplinarity and how important it is to adapt. It's not about trying to cling on to a particular very narrow thing that you do in your own research, but this is actually the chance to expand to something else.
Okay, Gerard?
I mean, much like Katarzyna, I would definitely encourage anyone who wants to expand their perspective and really engage in a theme or in a tackle a problem that they haven't been able to do within their own discipline. But yes, flexibility is key, and you have to be quite open to new ideas. I would also say I would really encourage anybody who wants to have impact. So obviously, the British Research Councils are very big on impact now and trying to actually affect the social world, or the economic world, the political world, you know, the world in general, outside academia. And I do think that interdisciplinarity is the way to do that. And so personally, I think that would be the biggest selling point to me, to anybody else thinking of doing this, would be that interdisciplinarity is the way to approach most of these complex challenges.
Great. Anna?
I would, particularly for the researchers from Europe and maybe the other parts of the world as well, Sadi, just the experience of it, actually, I would feel strongest recommend that.
And finally, Karen.
Yes, I would absolutely encourage someone to join the Crucible. I've met three great colleagues that are on this call. And if you're wanting to challenge yourself in your research and work in multidisciplinary ways, and I would agree with Gerard to make impact, then absolutely apply to the Crucible.
Who could disagree? We end as we started with Dr. Karen Donaldson, project manager at the National Robotarium at Heriot Watt University. You also heard from green regulations deviser and refiner, Dr. Onur Çağlaş Artantaş, originally from Turkey but currently working in Milan, Dr. Gerard Miller, professor in sociology at the University of Aberdeen, and Dr. Katarzyna Koval, applied mathematician at the University of Glasgow. That's it for this particular European Crucible podcast, but as I might have mentioned, there are four more others out there. So if you haven't, go listen.